It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome, welcome to Money for Lunch. Good to have you here. It's always good to have you guys here. And I think that we're going to get your day started with our good friend and regular contributor, Norm Blumenthal. Norm Blumenthal. Norm Blumenthal, he's an attorney for workers and consumers. He's selected as one of the top attorneys in Southern California. He's a regular contributor here, and I'm always excited to have him on the show. He's brings a lot of great energy, and he's very, very direct. Norm Blumenthal, welcome back, my friend.
Thanks, Bert. Here we are. This is the September show. We got the October and November, and then we have the election. You know, I want to talk to who I should call all my clients, all the working stiffs of America are my clients as far as I'm concerned. Even though I practice in California, I, consider everybody out there that's working for a living to be my clients. And I want to give everybody the best advice I can on the upcoming election, because this election, I can't impress on everybody more strongly that this is an adversary system we deal with in this country, and that's a good thing. On the one side, we have the Republicans, and they represent the interest of management and companies. They want workers to work for the least amount of money as possible and for the management and companies to make as much money as possible. On the other side, you have the Democrats. The Democrats represent the working stiff. They want to get the working stiff as much money as possible in their hands to spend so that they can make this economy go. And that is the tension. So right now in America, if you believe it or not, we're fighting for a $15 minimum wage across the country, and we're having good success in a lot of states. And right now, more than 50% of America works for less than $15 an hour. If you can believe that, less than $15 an hour. And that is the crux of the problem. The crux of the problem is that if you follow the money, why does Donald Trump put such a big emphasis on building this wall and kicking out the 11 million that he's never going to do and keeping these people underground? Why? Follow the money. Because right now, because of these 11 people being kept underground and out of the light, they have to take minimum wage or less. It's the underground economy, and they have no rights. They can't come out of the shadows. So if he makes them work 10 hours, if he cuts their pay below minimum wage, he doesn't pay overtime, he keeps the people working longer, it's too bad. They don't have workers' compensation. They have nothing. And their paychecks are off of a phony Social Security number, a phony name, and a phony U-9. We all know it. And the problem isn't the people in the country. The problem is the employers are not required by some system that works to identify workers that are not U.S. citizens or have work permits. That's the problem. Not any silly wall. It's not going to stop anybody from coming into this country. They just come across the border legally with a tourist a visa or a work permit or just crossing the border. And they come in with these visas and they stay, student visas. And then they go and work in the underground economy just like the Republicans want them to do. And that's what they want. So it's the economy. So everybody out there, vote your pocketbook. Think about what party in power is going to put more money in your pocket. That's all you should be thinking about in this election, and put all the other silliness out of the way. That's how I look at it, and that's how I think American laborers should look at it. It's the economy, stupid.
Yes, I agree with you. Look, I think that absolutely you need to be sensible. You need to absolutely vote with your pocketbook. I think that's the first step. If you are interested in having better living conditions and better wages, then I think you need to follow your pocketbook. You need to vote that way. Second of all, and I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat, but you have to be horrified to think that Donald Trump or somebody like Donald Trump could actually represent America. I mean, the guy is, you know, I liked him in the very beginning, but now he just scares me. He horrifies me. He says stuff that nobody should say, period, much less in a public environment, much less as the would-be president of our country. It's just ridiculous. And bottom line is, like you said, it's an adversarial system. Donald Trump is a businessman. He's going to vote with his pocketbook. He's going to try to do things to enhance his career, his companies, and that's in direct opposition to the employees that work for him.
That's exactly right. What his proposal is, he wants to have a tax cut for the rich and increase the national debt and let the next generation worry about it. That's how he does his business. His MO is to borrow as much as possible, put as much in his pocket, and walk away from the problem. That's how he's going to leave this country. He will leave this country if he's elected, and you're always reelected for 8 years. We have what, $20 trillion in debt now? We'll have $50 trillion in debt, and it'll be on everybody's back. And at some point in time, the debt becomes such that you can't pay it. And what does Donald Trump say? So what? Don't pay it. But we've lived for the last 200 years on the fact that the United States of America has the full faith and credit that is AAA in the rest of the world. And we don't want to lose this. We don't want to be Greece or Spain or Italy. We don't want to be a country that has put itself in so much debt that it's not recognized as a power in the world anymore. And his idea is, well, you know, we got a military. We'll just go out and take it. You know, he complains because we didn't take Iraqi oil. That's not being a good citizen of the world. And he admires Putin because he's not a good citizen of the world. He admires people that are not good citizens of the world. And this is no way for America to act.
And I want to go one step further. Not only does he emulate people who are historically, meaning they have a history of bad dealings and bad behavior, but he mocks those people who are doing the opposite. He mocks people that are doing good things. He mocks people that are handicapped, who are trying their best. He mocks people, like POW survivors. You know, he mocks people who are doing good things and who stand for
And the idea is, look, all those things are, you know, everybody on every talk show talks about, but I want to talk about things that other talk shows don't talk about. And, for example, right now it's going in front of the Supreme Court is a case that was prosecuted by the National Labor Relations Board, which is now a majority of Democrats have been appointed. And so they're pro-labor. And what they've done is, and what management and companies have done, and I'm sure everybody out there is familiar with it, you may not have looked at it lately, but if you're working for a company, you probably have an arbitration provision in your agreement. And that arbitration provision in that agreement across the country precludes you from organizing whereby you can have a class action brought on your behalf. Someone can bring it and prosecute unfair labor practices, wage and hour theft, for you as a group without you having to do it yourself. And that allows attorneys like me to take the cases because there's enough money in the cases then for attorneys to step up. Right now it's going to the Supreme Court. If Donald Trump is elected president, he will appoint members of the Supreme Court that will strike down that decision, and you'll all be stuck with class action waivers, both consumers, employees, across the country. This will have an adverse effect on all of your lawsuits. And that's going to adversely affect how much money is in your pocket because you can't organize. And it's I'm not talking about labor unions. I'm talking about class actions.
I want you to explain why this arbitration is bad for us. Because the way a lot of this arbitration stuff is sold is that it reduces litigation and it's better for everybody. But explain the big downside to being connected, what you lose when you accept one of these arbitration deals.
Okay, first of all, you don't go into before a judge. You don't have a right to appeal. You go into an arbitrator, and the arbitrators make their money. They're paid by the employer has to pay all of the arbitrators their fees. So when you go in front of him, who is he going to vote? Who is he going to rule in favor of? It's the guy that's paying him because he wants repeat business. If the arbitrator doesn't rule in his favor, the next time there's a choice for arbitrators, that employer will strike that arbitrator. And that arbitrator will then be in a position where he'll not be able to make any money. That's the first thing. So it's a stacked deck against you if you go into arbitration. If you have a good case, whether it's wage theft, whether it's a wrongful term, whether it's sexual harassment, whatever you're going to have or discrimination, you'll find an attorney to take that case because if there's not an arbitration provision, you can bring that case as a class action if it happens, or to the extent you have damages, you can bring that as a damage claim, or in every state they have labor boards. You can bring it in front of the labor board where you have an impartial labor board representative who is a government employee and is not paid by the employers. So all of those things are helping you. The arbitration provision is a scam. It's pro-management. Why do you think they put it in every contract? Not to protect the employees. Come on. You got to remember who you're dealing with. Their job as management is to make the company as profitable as possible. And the first thing you can do to make a company profitable is pay your labor force as little as possible and to protect yourself from group actions. And that's what they're doing. So don't be felony stupid. Every voter out there, you have to vote your pocketbook. You all can be upset. You're not making enough money. Your job's not as good as it should be. You can all moan and cry and scream. But at the end of the day, if you want to get some relief, if you want to be able to go back to school and not put yourself in debt where you can't ever possibly pay it off and learn a skill and make sure if you get a job, it's $15 an hour, and make sure that the people working in this country are all registered to work, have work permits, then you vote for the Democrat because they're there to protect the labor force. If you want to continue to have an underground economy where your job, you're never going to get a good job because you can't afford to go back to school, because you can't afford to compete with the underground economy that's paying minimum wage or less, and the minimum wage stays at $7.25 an hour because the federal government's never going to raise it and the Republicans in the red states are never going to raise it, then vote for a Republican and take your medicine. But don't complain about the fact that you don't have any jobs. And when the Republicans take away your Social Security and when they take away your Medicare and when they take away your Obamacare, when all of that comes out, because guess what? The country can't afford to have that anymore because we're so far in debt because we've reduced the taxes on all the rich people, then do it. Vote for the Republicans. You'll deserve what you get up and down the line. But as your attorney, as your advocate, I'm advising you in this my strongest possible way I can that if you are working stiff in America, vote Democratic from the top of the ticket on down.
Absolutely. Look, I just like the fact that if you do the math, and I want to take what you're talking about, Norm, that if you are an individual who's complaining about your conditions, if you're complaining about your work environment, then again, you have to follow the money. You have to vote with your pocketbook. And that is so simple. There's nothing else to it. Just vote your pocketbook, and that's it. There's just nothing else.
That's it.
To me, that's just simple. Yeah.
It's just that simple. I mean, they can be all the talk on all the pundit shows and everything in the back and forth. Hillary said this, Donald said this, you know, Hillary. And all those things are good for TV because it works for TV.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, the politicians, at the end of the day, either they're pro-management or they're pro-labor. One or the other. And the Republicans now have coalesced upon this pro-management philosophy, and that's all they are. And the Democrats have coalesced around pro-labor, and that's who they are. And so that's your choice. If you're a working stiff, you're not going to get any good laws out of the Republicans. It's not going to happen. And so if you end up voting for a Republican and you're down on your luck, well, all you're doing is digging a deeper hole. And don't be, you know, when things are bad and you don't keep digging, you know, come out of your hole and put away all of your picadillos and all of your prejudices that you may have and all the complaints. And, you know, it's everybody else's fault and it's not yours. And guess what? If you vote for a Republican, if you vote for Donald Trump, it is your fault because you're going to get what you deserve. That's all I can tell you in the strongest possible sense, in every way possible. This man, we can talk about his competence or incompetence. I'm not going to go there. We know he's incompetent, but that's not the point. The point is he's not on your side. He is pro-management. We're in an adversary system. Don't be felony stupid. Vote for Hillary Clinton. Vote for a Democrat up and down the ticket.
I love that. I love that. And we're going to end on that note. Norm Blumenthal, it's always delightful to have you on the show. Love your straightforward, no BS way of delivering, your stuff there. And I agree with you. Look, vote with your pocketbook. Don't be felony stupid. I love that phrase that you've coined so eloquently. Norm Blumenthal, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thanks, Bert. Always the best.
Good stuff there from attorney Norm Blumenthal. And by the way, if you need an attorney, he serves Southern California, but he can help you nationally. He can hook you up with other people. And so if you have questions about what's happening, if you need help with your job or you think you've been mistreated, check out Norm Blumenthal at BAM. That's BAMLawCA.com. BAMLawCA.com. Him and his team will talk to you. They'll talk to you for free. They'll point you in the right direction. They'll give you some free tips. And always good to have him on the show. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
We are back. My next guest, Brad Axelrod. As a consultant, speaker, and spiritual adventure tour facilitator, Brad Axelrod supports coaches, consultants, and other visionaries to leverage their fear, freeing them to create the impact, income, and lifestyle they desire. Having produced over 100 live events with top thought leaders and best-selling author, he's transformed the lives of thousands with his Face Your Dragon message. He's a founding member of the Association of Transformational Leaders and has been featured in such notable medias as NBC Nightly News, PBS Television, OC Register, LA Times, and the USC News 21. Brad Axelrod, welcome to Money for Lunch.
It's great to be here.
All right. And so did I get it right? Axelrod. Rad. Axelrod. Yeah,
absolutely. You bet. If you said it with an Austrian or German accent, it's probably Axelrod. So that's close enough.
Axelrod. Well, good, man. Good to have you here. I love this message. I love this idea of facing your dragon because we all have them. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you've accomplished. We're constantly dealing with this dragon.
You bet, 100%. And I just want to warn you real quickly that, you know, I'm in Costa Rica currently facing many of my own dragons and enjoying the lifestyle that it provides here. But I also have a slight delay in my internet. So I'm hearing just a small delay there. But you're right. We all have fear. And I basically coined fear this way in the sense that our greatest fear and our greatest resistance are the two things that can set us totally free in life and create the impact, income, and lifestyle that we desire.
I like that. I like that a lot. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about being, you know, found out as an imposter or feeling as though you're a fraud or something like that. Talk about that, because this is something that many of us struggle with.
Yeah, so that's the first of five dragons I found after having 200 live events with some of the biggest thought and business leaders on the planet and attracting, you know, major media outlets, like you said, NBC Nightly News. Like, I had to face this dragon big time when NBC Nightly News came out. I was like, where am I? To be on national media sharing this message that was relatively new to me back 10 years ago. You know, it's like, who am I to do this? And I think we all have that imposter fraud syndrome. And sometimes you make it, which I think is one approach, but there are many other approaches. Like approaches, you know, we can get in touch with really what it is that makes us sort of excavating from our past and finding out where we're not really that imposter fraud. We have a lot of life experience and a lot of challenges or themes in our life, things we've overcome that actually can prop us up to you know, we're sharing or whoever we're being.
Yeah, that internet connection, you're right, is a little bit clunky there. So, but we'll do the best we can. You know, you're absolutely right. Look, we all feel as though sometimes we, you know, we don't deserve it or we feel like imposters. Where does these feelings come from, Brad? What is your take on this?
Yeah, really trace back. Hey, let me know if you can hear me okay. I always hang up and call back in on a different line, but can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're a little choppy. Why don't you try calling back in? And
really...
can you call back in,
buddy? I'll be right back.
All right. Meanwhile, while we're waiting for Brad, I'm going to entertain you with my many, many impressions. And you know, now that I've said that, all my impressions have left my head, so I wasn't prepared. I psyched myself out. Welcome. No, I just can't. I was going to do Christopher Walken, and now I just, you know, I can't seem to do him. All right. Well, listen, we're gonna hang out here waiting for Brad Axelrod to call back in, and we're talking about that imposter syndrome that sometimes we all have, that feeling as though, who am I to be in this room with these people? Who am I to be on TV? Who am I to be on stage? Who am I to be doing X, Y, Z? And so my question to Brad is, where do these feelings come from?
Yeah, Brad? You know, let me know if that sounds a little better.
A lot better, yeah.
Okay, great. I've been having some internet issues the last couple of days here. So, you know, bottom line, I feel, at least from my experience, having been in the personal development space for the last 10 years and noticing in myself all of the fears or things that I've had to face, that frankly, it comes from childhood conditioning, whatever that conditioning is, right? Where did we feel unlovable or not worthy to, you know, I mean, it could have happened on the playground in grade school or, I mean, anything at all. Typically, it's from mommy or daddy or surrogate parents that we've learned that we're either unworthy or we're compensating somewhere or overcompensating somewhere. So I like to take clients back to find the core or the root cause of what's really sort of running that tape for them or that loop.
Yeah. And you know, but what's interesting is that, again, this happens to us no matter who we are. I mean, You know, you again, you work with a lot of big names, and I have found that, again, this seems to affect us all, and it's just something, it's one of the, what do you call it, one of the dragons that we're dealing with, right?
Yeah, I've never found that they go away. It doesn't matter if I was on the starting straight racing semi-professional motocross or anywhere. Speaking, of course, is the biggest fear for all of us. You know, I mean, most people in the world have public speaking is their greatest fear, and that almost always comes from that loop of who am I to share this message? Is it going to land well? Are people going to get, you know, what I'm saying? Am I going to, it all comes back to love. Everything comes back to love. Will I be loved? Will I be rejected? Then I'm unlovable. It's really about love. Everything is, both the negative and positive. Receiving love. Can I give love? Am I afraid to give love? It's all back to love. Everything.
Yeah. And you know what? What's interesting is I know a lot of people are saying, oh, that's so hokey. It's not about love. It's about this or that. But it really is. It boils down to the reason that we do or don't do things is really because of that, of love. I mean, look, I know people, I've interviewed a lot of smokers. I did this many years ago, and I asked smokers, why did they start smoking? And not one of them said, oh, because of the slick ad in the magazine. They all said the same thing. I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be, you know, all my friends are smoking, so I wanted to do what they were doing. What is that equal to? That equates to love. I wanted to be loved.
Yep.
I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be like my friends, so I wanted to show them love or whatever. So we do things or don't do things depending on that level of love. And, you know, I think that you have to – you know, sometimes sit quietly by yourself and reflect on this, and you'll see that it's true. It's ultimately all comes down to that. It's an amazing thing when I came to that realization. It's very freeing, and you start to look at humanity different when people act up. I know I had a little bit more patience with them, and I had a different understanding. Because I knew really what was coming, you know, where they were coming from.
Yeah, it's so well said. I mean, you nailed on something I like to talk about sort of from the neuroscience perspective is that, you know, we're either everything we're doing is seeking love. So we're either chasing some sort of an adrenaline rush, which I did for years, or a dopamine hit or an oxytocin hit. Like we're literally these these meat suits that are seeking chemical rushes from different experiences. Love is, you know, oxytocin
right.
is obviously the love drug. So it's really about that. Everything that we're doing is trying to either have some sort of a chemical rush, 100%.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And what do you call it? And sometimes the way we get our love, our rush, our validation is by building a big building or, you know, writing that book or, you know, squashing the competition, all that other stuff. It's
yep.
amazing. It's amazing how messed up we are as human beings.
I've got to find humor in it. Laugh at how messed up we are, but 100%. You know, we've got this opportunity to recognize when we're, you've probably heard the term chasing your dragon, which is really, you
right.
know, the opium dens and we're constantly chasing this inevitable happiness that comes from or that doesn't come from things or from buildings or from validation. That's not the true peace or joy we're seeking. It provides short hits of dopamine, typically. Yeah, so it's the lasting stuff underneath that when we face all these dragons and learn where we distract ourselves from what's most meaningful in our lives that we actually create a purposeful life of whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So let me ask you this. 'Cause again, in the work that you do, how do you find or how do you help people find the courage to charge what they're worth? I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? There are people out there who are doing great work, but they're afraid to ask for money. They're afraid of the whole money thing. They're afraid to charge what they're worth. They're afraid to ask for the money. They're afraid of money is the best way to put it. Talk about that a little bit.
Right. Well, you're just repeating back one of the five dragons that I've come up with. That's exactly right. So the first one is obviously you'll be found out like an imposter fraud. The second is that you'll, when you put yourself out there, you won't charge what you're offering. And the third, real quickly, is that you'll never have the courage to charge what you're worth. So what that looks like is, you know, we all get desperate sometimes for money. I mean, certainly I've been there. I've been broke numerous times in my life. I've had $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 months on the regular in recent years. The point is this: back in the day when I was a new consultant, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, it's like, man, I don't think I can charge these kind of fees. Who am I? I must be an imposter fraud. There's no way I can charge, you know, what a regular consultant will charge. So I'm going to give away my services or give them away for really cheap. And then get in this weird dynamic of feeling undervalued and providing too much energy or too much time or whatever it is to somebody, and then resenting them, resenting myself for saying yes to it. So there's an opportunity to understand what's underneath that. And really, it all comes back to fear. Like we were talking about, fear of rejection, fear of starving, fear. Like, we've just got to check in and make sure that we're actually being real with what's presented in front of us. What is it that we're actually trying to accomplish? What's the transformation we're providing? And then finding what that's worth, really understanding in the marketplace, you know, can it be $500 an hour? I know plenty of folks who charge $500 plus an hour. So, and part of it is just simply standing in that value and putting the fundamental business systems and structures in place so that you're okay to charge those fees. You've got to have the value, you know, both internally and externally. You've got to provide the value, but you've got to own your value. And that comes from, you know, lots of sort of excavating of who you are in the marketplace, crafting a good message that feels in alignment, a business that feels in alignment, whatever that is for you. I mean, you know this stuff, Bert. You're kind of in the in this yourself. You're out sharing your message every day.
Sure. You know, and let me ask you this, because I think people need to know, I'm always learning this, is what are some of the ideas, techniques, or strategies that you've used to overcome your fear, whether it's charging money, whether it's taking on a new goal or showing up for a media interview. When you hit fear, how do you deal with it?
Yeah, well, a dear friend of mine said this years ago, and I thought it was brilliant. It's just fear is excitement without the breath. Now, I know he's actually quoting somebody, and I'm forgetting the name of where he got that from. Might be the founder of Gestalt Therapy, I think, that actually said that. Fear is excitement without the breath. So if we can channel the fear when it comes up, we really just want to be in touch with it. Oh, here it comes again. There's that fear, right? So first, awareness, recognizing that it's probably not real. It's just that fight or flight or freeze mechanism that's coming over us. You know, I mean, there were numerous times I'd be sitting on the start straight of a motocross line with 39 other hungry young people like me, wide open into the first turn, probably 50 miles an hour. I mean, you could die or easily get paralyzed or break lots of things, but you do it anyway. So the first answer is this: step up and do it anyway. Just breathe into it, do it. And you'll find that most of the time it's just all this run from the saber-toothed tiger thing that isn't real. Okay. So exposure therapy, that's the first thing. Exposure therapy, expose yourself to it regularly. Step up and do it anyway. Feel the fear, breathe into it, and just go for it. Okay? Most of the times we get in our intellect. I love to paraphrase Einstein and say that our intellect is a wonderful servant but a horrible master. So it's really about embodying the kinesthetic experience of the fear and ultimately using it. That's sort of the next step. Use all of that energy for your benefit. Don't let it freeze you up, but actually channel it into whatever it is. You know, there's adrenaline there. Adrenaline is really powerful. We don't want to live in this adrenalized state. It's very taxing on the body. But the point is, when you have these experiences of adrenaline, use that adrenaline to your advantage. So actually leverage the fear and use the fear. Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love it. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that, you know, step into it anyway. And I think one of the things that I want to get your thoughts on, again, this is definitely true when I'm, you know, writing an article or writing a book or on stage or even doing a video, that when I start thinking about how I look, how I sound, how I feel, that's when things go from bad to worse. But when I start focusing on delivering value to my audience, right, whether it's a live seminar or an interview or whatever, it freely flows out. And I think that's the way a lot of this fear stuff works. We're thinking about, man, how stupid we're going to look, what's going to happen to me if I fail, versus just saying, hey, you know what, people need my help, let me just serve, and whatever happens, happens.
Oh, you totally nailed it, man. It's like we get that self-importance thing going, and I think sometimes we're afraid that we don't want to show up as a narcissist. I heard you guys talking about Trump and Clinton before, and I firmly believe Donald Trump is a raging narcissist. So a lot of us are afraid to show up that way and show up maybe as braggadocious or as you know, really own our power. But you're right. There's a way to be in service and a way to take the energy away from making it about me, or that self-importance, or the sort of self-rejection that happens when we're in that, oh my God, it's about me, they're not going to like me. And you're absolutely right. Flipping it to, you know, how can I be of service? How can I be this vessel of like a messenger or whatever it is, just this support for them, right? How do we make it about them? Yeah, it's not about us anymore. And that's the shift from sort of the me to we cycle that we're in. You know, Donald Trump's in an old paradigm. He's a 50s paradigm of him and me, and he's a me-focused individual, right? You can see the difference in the world.
Yes, absolutely. Not only is he a me-focused individual, but I think he's also a fear-focused individual. I think that one of the reasons that he's done as well as he has is because a lot of the people that are his supporters are very scared, very afraid, have a fear mentality.
Right. You're absolutely right. And the Republicans love to use that and turn that knife in of fear. It's a very, very strong drug. It really is an addicting drug. Yes. To be in this fear-based place. And who wants to live in that place? I certainly don't. And I'm not saying be Pollyanna or just, you know, spiritual bypass reality. I look at reality very seriously, but I don't want to filter my life through fear and always be planning for the worst. I'm planning for the best, man. I'm swinging for the fences. That's another thing I want folks to really remember, and to echo what you're saying. Focus on what you want, not what you don't want. What do you actually want to have in your experience? And yes, experience that is happening now, and it will become a reality, whether it's a month or 5 years later. But if you'll look back in a couple of years and literally see everything that you were holding in your consciousness coming to fruition, guaranteed.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I totally agree with that. It's interesting. Sometimes we discount how powerful our focus, how powerful our chronic thinking is. And whether we're constantly thinking about something positive or constantly thinking on something negative, we create these experiences based on what we're thinking about.
That's exactly right. 100%. And most of that comes from childhood conditioning, mommy, daddy conditioning. And then of course the church, the state, religion, friends, all that stuff, right? Yeah. But we have choice.
Absolutely.
We have choice.
Absolutely. So Brad, let's talk about this real quick. Tell us a little bit about your story. How did you, you know, what were you doing before you started as a consultant speaker and spiritual adventure? Talk about your, you know, give us like the Reader's Digest version of where you were and how you got to where you're at.
All right, you bet. So I think the simplest answer, first of all, the reason I got into the transformational space was massive pain, right? Literal, emotionally, physically, you know, not eating right, just like not having any idea, and recklessly and amazingly thrashing through life in this adrenalized state, just charging life. I've always been this aggressive, adrenalized, excitement-seeking person. The more I understood why that was, and we all do this, like there's patterns that we're matching biochemically and physiologically and neurologically from our childhood. So we're all recycling and sort of setting ourselves up to re-experience that biochemical, whatever it is. So the reason I say that and frame it that way is that I was simply an addict. I didn't know it, right? Charging life, drugs, alcohol, lots of business, like just seeking adrenaline and adventure everywhere I could. That was perfect to be a motocross racer, a downhill skier, a street bike rider, like adventure sports addict. And, I said, that's very self-indulgent. How can I flip this to become a person of service? That self-indulgence didn't work anymore. And if any of the listeners or yourself included, Bert, get what that feels like, to where you've run out of self-indulgent things to do and you've gotten to this point where it's time to be of service. That was when my dad died. That was the final. If you ignore the feather and ignore the brick, you're going to hear the Mack truck. And I got mowed by a Mack truck, right? And that freaking woke me up. It's like, all right, I'm not here to self-indulge anymore. I'm here to be of service. And that's when I started leading groups. And, that was back in like 2004. And then here we are today, hundreds of events later. I'm living in a gorgeous home in Costa Rica. I'm traveling the world and serving many, many, major thought leaders, all the way down to folks who are just getting their message crafted.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Why Costa Rica?
Well, I've been trying to get down here for 10 years. I had multiple businesses and pieces of real estate. I've kind of cleaned the slate enough to where I could get down here. I mean, many reasons. First of all, the people are amazing. Their value system is family, community, education, healthcare. They're the sweetest humans I've ever met on the planet. Just very, very sweet people. I wanted to become fluent in Spanish. I wanted to be standing right now. I'm simply in shorts. I don't have a shirt on. I don't have a shoes on pretty much all year round. Like that to me is amazing. Geez, what else? I'm a mile from the beach. The cost of living is probably a third of Southern California. I mean, you name it. It's pretty amazing here.
I love Costa Rica. And a lot of people don't know this, but you can actually drive up to Costa Rica. It takes a while, but it is connected by islands and bridges and whatever. And it's interesting because I hear this all the time that it's the people that make it so inviting and that you just can't wait to get back.
No, 100%. It's the people here are absolutely sweet. They're present. They're kind. They're considerate, they're generous, they're family oriented. Yeah, very, very sweet people.
I love it. I love it. Brad, we're out of time. Just enjoyed our visit today. Looking forward to having you back again, my friend. And have fun
awesome.
Out there in your shorts in Costa Rica and keep doing what you're doing. And we'll have you back soon.
Very good. Thank you so much. Take care, Brad.
You bet. All righty. Good stuff there from Brad Axelrod. Consultant, speaker, and spiritual adventurer, tour facilitator, and just love his story. I love where his head's at and chasing or slaying your dragons, right? Facing your dragons. We all have to face our dragon. And you can find out more about Brad at his website, faceyourdragon.com, faceyourdragon.com. As always, I am so humble and delighted that you spend time with us, that you download our show, that you share it with people, that you connect with me on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. I appreciate that so very, very much. And as always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.